Hey, Josh, we're talking to Josh Hodery today, and he's our newest team member here at Strategies for College. We're delighted to have you on board, Josh. Well, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about what you do and how you get it done?
I tutor for the ACT, SAT, a lot of standardized tests. How I initially start is I try to just get to know your student and your student's goals, because that will direct me in terms of, you know, what plan I'm going to put together. You know, if you want to get, I don't know, into state school and the, you know, minimum ACT is like 22-25, well, that tells me that I'm going to build a plan that's designed to like get the most points possible immediately, right? So like I'm going to build around probably two core subjects that I think are the fastest thing to get points at, and I'm just going to attack those for the most part to where maybe we can do this in like one exam. If you know you need a 32-30 plus a score like that, well, depending on where you're at, you know, if you're coming to me with 27-28, like, you know, I'm going to take a more well-rounded approach, but, you know, target the things that are your deficits. But if you're starting 22, 23, and you're wanting that 32, well, I know that I need a broad approach. So I'm usually going to attack a couple of things still that will be designed to like push your score up as fast as possible. But I'm really going to target at least one area where, you know, you improve so much that I can like move it out of the way for that next test. I know this, you know, it's usually English. But I'll attack that subject to where I can get it out of your mind that next exam, and I'll start attacking those other deficits. But again, it's got to be a more well-rounded approach. So a lot of this starts with just knowing what you want. So that's mm-hmm. initial conversation is what tells me what your child needs, right? So or the client's child needs, and then from there, in terms of the tutoring aspect, you know, English, science, again, easiest thing. And a lot of that revolves around, you know, curriculum I've written in terms of how to attack the English test, to where it gets really hard to miss a question. If you memorize, like, it's almost a formula that I've designed. And, you know, English is largely content driven. There's a lot of strategy test technique that goes into it, but it's content at the end of the day. So like that's what we're targeting first. Science is more of a way of thinking that I think is really easy to buy into, with a grand overall strategy that will come into play. I think once students realize how easy science is and like what they should actually be attacking and how to progress through the exam and how to think through all of the different questions and learn the techniques for just getting questions right so easily, like you see a lot of improvement and change there initially, like really fast. And then I attack reading math a little differently. Reading's pure strategy, and it's just constant manipulation of the test based off of where their reading comprehension skill is. It is also the hardest thing to improve because it's so driven by your own ability to read. So, and if you're not a strong reader, I mean, you might not be taking the full test with me. Like you might be taking three, we'll design a strategy that you're taking three out of the four sections, and we're using kind of test manipulation on the fourth passage to get as many questions correct by using strategy based off of what you answered in the first three sections. I know that seems like very convoluted and vague. I don't want to give all those secrets away, but for the most part, it's just test manipulation based off of probability that something has to be that answer. So that's, again, like it is hard if you're a poor reader to take tests. And I see a lot of, you know, parents that come to me that are like, my kid's just a bad test taker. And what that really means at the end of the day is their kid probably is just not a strong reader, because it impacts mm-hmm. the whole exam. And it impacts them going to for the rest of their lives. So like, that's one of the most important things when I catch kids early. Always inevitably get a call every year from like some seventh or eighth grade parent that's like, hey, can we start ACT? And I need you to be through algebra 2, 10th into 10th grade. That's a great time to start. But for now, like read, like, and I try to get them to not read books, read articles. You know, it's daunting for a lot of kids to mm-hmm. read books. They won't pull it off the shelf, but you know what they'll do is they'll read articles, and that's what we attack. And I, you know, if I catch a kid in 9th, 10th grade, that's the kind of plan I put them on, is to try to try to improve by reading the newspaper. Like the thing I did in high school, one of my teachers told me to, he'd bring me the Sunday edition of the New York Times. I'd read it, try to read it cover to cover.
Really interesting. So not read nonfiction, just dive into a short article and.
Yeah, and put a timer on it. Because that's what it's about, right? It's that timer on the ACT that kills students, right? So that's, you know, and as you're weighing, you know, I know this is a topic we're going to discuss, but as you're weighing ACT versus SAT, like critical thing for me is there are differences math-wise, differences reading-wise. I think the SAT, ACT's, you know, it's basically the same for English, but the reading, you know, you get 13 minutes per passage, essentially on the SAT versus about 8 minutes and 45 on ACT. A lot of people liken the SAT to that type of chess player who, you know, methodical, slow, like no timer, and the ACT more to game of speed chess. So in terms of like, and kids don't know how their brain thinks yet, but it's a good reflection on telling you how your brain thinks by taking both and getting experience with both and seeing how you perform on one versus the other. But that doesn't mean like, you extrapolate out that just because you perform maybe slightly better on the SAT that you're a better SAT versus ACT taker, right? There are other factors like the science section. Some people just hate it, can't do it. So, you know, they should do SAT. Some people don't know how easy it is and don't know how to think through it. So like, there are a lot of things that go into that, but, you know, major differences SAT wise, I really do like being able to think through things longer, but probably harder questions on the SAT, or can you do that speed, direct reading style that the ACT requires.
So do you recommend that students prepare for both?
It's a school, you know, like if it's an Ivy League, top tier schools, like I think SAT might be the test that you should be taking with an emphasis on performing better in math versus the verbal component. Like that's kind of what I've heard for the last 6-7 years is the target. So it's not just about test scores, right? It's about a lot of other stuff. But if we were going to judge it based off test scores, that's what we'd want, right? And I think that as it relates to like one versus the other, I think ACT is easier to do personally.
I think that SAT changed things up a number of years ago in a way that made it a little closer to what ACT is. And they've just actually dropped subject tests. So do you, in your sort of intake interview, talk a little bit with the students and the parents about what their college goals are then?
If they don't know, like if they have zero clue, then I'm like, okay, here's some homework. These are schools. Here's 20 to 25 schools I'd like you to start looking at. And just literally, you can make just the silliest cut you want. Like, I really hate the cold. Like, I don't want to move up Missouri.
Weather.
You know, and like you just start with that kind of stuff. And then once you get it down, maybe it's a region that you start seeing like a lot of connection to a certain region. Maybe you start seeing a lot of connection to the size. And then we get into like the minutia of it. That's them going to do their work, like, or do the research on their own with their parents, start thinking about this, right? Do we want money? Do we want to go to best school for the thing you want to study? Are we doing this to XYZ reason? And then we start ranking things. And I really, you know, we start that conversation early on, but we focus on ACT. So improving our scores. And then, you know, like 3-4 months in, like when we've taken a couple tests, then we have a better idea of like, you know, at least I do, like, where are we going to fall on this? Right.
Well, and of course we as counselors, you know, in the academic advising piece of this often, you know, have to look at all criteria, and that all 17 and 18 year olds continues to change over time. Tell me a little bit about your take on the test optional environment that we're in right now, and where do you see that going?
You can say that all you want, but I just know, like, with the diversity of schools here locally, how is a school like, so we're in Northwest Arkansas, and it is actually a very affluent area with, like, you know, Walmart, J.B. Hunt, Tyson's are right here on each other, right? Mm-hmm. So we have really good schools in this area, but the range from one school versus another, I don't know how a school in like California, USC or UCLA or Stanford or Ivy League school on the East Coast can even extrapolate meaning from someone's GPA here. There is no way, because we have a school here where private school seen as a good school, but I think their average GPA is about a 3.95, And then we have another school down the road that's a great public school. It's solid. I think their average GPA is like a 2.9, right? So, you know, whenever you look at a kid that has a 4.0 or plus at this public school that I think is really good versus that private school, how can you tell the difference? Because like, if you go to this private school, it's easy. I mean, like, if you have a pulse, you probably have a 4.0 at this school. You know,
well, you probably have a lot more individualized attention. You've got as much smaller student to teacher ratio.
If you look at their average ACT score, now this is the thing. Like, when you start looking at their average ACT, they're around a 20, and this public school is closer to a 26. You need that because that tells you more than what, you know, a GPA does from this random individual who's applying to your school from Arkansas. You know, like if you're on East Coast and you go to a great private school and you're well known in the area by colleges, like you don't need the standardized testing as much. But you know, the rest of America, from west of North Carolina and east of California, so all everything in the middle, we don't have well-known like high schools to be able for schools to even know who we really are. So without having a standardized score and whatever it means to you, like if you think, oh, it doesn't tell you anything about someone's intelligence, yeah, but it tells you like how much work they can potentially digest in a given amount of time. Like that, that's to me what a standardized test tells you is, if I give you an hour of work, you can do the hour of work in an hour. If you have a 28 on the ACT, if you have a 32 to 34, guess what? I bet it takes you 30 minutes to do this hour of work, right? So like at the end of the day, at least it tells you a student's capacity to learn things in a given amount of time. It does not tell you or give you meaning in terms of, you know, if you got a 21 on the ACT, it doesn't mean that person's not going to be successful and can't learn. That's not what it's saying. It's just at that point in life, someone with a 21, it's probably going to take them 2 hours to do 1 hour of work. And yeah, like if someone's willing to put that time in college, like, yeah, of course they're going to achieve at the same level as others. And, you know, they'll probably grow and get things done faster and all of that. And like, I don't think there's much tied up in the IQ portion, except when you get to the top bands of the ACT, when you're trying to separate out a 33 from a 34 or 35 or 36, right? Yeah. But really everything in the middle from 21 to 32, like it's work effort and where you are at on a timeline. I always tell students, because they get caught up in the intelligence part of this, but like, I always look at intelligence like a timeline. Like, I'm here on the timeline. You may be here, but I'm also like 15 years older than you. Like I've had all this time to grow and, you know, it's your responsibility to catch me. That's what I see it as. And I think people get caught up because, you know, they score lower than they would like, or they don't get into that school that, you know, they think they deserve to be at. Maybe we view it in the wrong way. Like it should be incentive to drive to be better, to grow. Like I can do this.
I mean, I think it's a component to the student's profile that isn't going away. And that was kind of what I was thinking. Yep. Is even though many schools, many colleges, of course, have had to go test optional this year because of some parts of the country, there's been just an inability to even take the test. Yep. You have to say optional and really mean it. But I think that, and some schools have already committed to next year being test optional as well.
Yeah.
In their application.
Yeah, I saw Cornell did that the other day.
I think a number of them are, and I think once the Ivies and top tier schools go that way, almost everyone will follow. It's an interesting thing, and there's a lot of conversation that goes back and forth. And you know, so I'm looking at the whole idea of standardized testing and what the role it plays versus the GPA, versus some of these other accolades that compose a student's profile. And you know, so thinking of it in your terms of how flexible GPA can be. It's an interesting perspective that you bring to it. I know I look at a school's profile, and I just as we were talking about earlier, the whole how many options do they have in honors and APs or IBs versus what their actual curriculum story looks like, because we know colleges talk about GPA, rigor of course load, your scores, and your essay, and those are sort of the top four criteria, with shifting weight kind of moving around dependent on the year and the pool. So it's just an interesting phenomenon that we're seeing right now. I'm of the feeling that in some ways the SAT and ACTs are going nowhere. They're always going to, they're always going to be here.
It's got to be standardized.
Bottom line for you is test optional is not going to be the way of the future, or is it?
We could have more different tests, but tests won't go away. I don't know how you compare everyone.
Well, that's great. Thanks for joining me today, Josh. And I appreciate the conversation.